Tell now.
I think the association, is this going to be all right?
Yes, that's fine, yes.
I think the association was the brainchild partly of Eva Hubbock and partly of Sir E.D. Simon, who became later Lord Simon of Withenshaw. Now, Eva Hubbock at that time was principal of Morley College, and I was taking one of the tutorial classes run by the Joint Committee of the Workers' Educational Association at London University, and it met at Morley College.
I see.
Now, that was where I first got to know Eva Hubbock. I believe it was the rise of the dictatorships, I think, that made Eva Hubbock, Simon and several other people think that it was important to do something about the active promotion of belief in democracy in the schools. She assembled together, I think, a group of about 20 people, and I was, well, a sort of unofficial secretary. We had a meeting where they all sat round a table and one after the other made pronouncements on this subject. And I took notes and then presented them with a sort of instant summary of it at the end, which it was agreed should form the basis for a short pamphlet called Bias and Education for Democracy, which I was to write, which I did. I think I may still have a copy of that somewhere, but I've not been able to get my hands on it yet. If I do, I'll let you see it.
It's kind of, I can get it in the Bodleian Library, I think.
Oh, can you? Yes, yes.
There.
It's quite a small thing.
So that was really a digest of discussions that
yes,
you had commonly.
It was really putting forward the thesis that there ought to be political education in schools. Now, this was rather a ticklish subject, and it was important to get the blessing of all parties. So we had to submit it to people from the three main parties. I remember having an interview with Kenneth Bickthorne,
in
the Conservative Party,
yes.
Who gave a grudging agreement. If I remember rightly, it was Hal Laskey who gave it a blessing on behalf of the Labour Party. Can't remember who did so on behalf of the Liberal Party. But anyhow, this I think will be recorded in the preface to this little pamphlet. So we were able to circulate to schools a document setting out the case for education for democracy. Then we got to work on definite projects. One was the book I was to write, to be a sort of straightforward textbook of politics. Though I must say, I do remember Eva Hubbock saying to me after it was completed, you know, it's not the book I really wanted. But I never quite got to understand what the book she really wanted was. It had a rather limping start because it was first published in 1938. Well, then, of course, came the war. But toward the end of the war and after, Army Education took it up. And its sales began to improve very rapidly. Indeed, in the days of rather low MP salaries, it was our financial standby during the 50s. And, of course, I had to revise it again and again.
It's gone through about five editions, hasn't it?
I think five editions and 15 impressions. The last one being in 1965, when I had to get Dick Leonard of the Fabian Society to do the revising for me, because by then I was one secretary and I couldn't possibly do it myself.
Are you going to do another edition, actually?
No, I think not. I think as much new wine has been poured into that old bottle as it would take.
How did you write it? Did you write it partly out of the discussions being held in the association, or was it...
No, I really had to write this myself and go around and see people whom I thought would be helpful, who were referred to in the preface of it.
So really, it owes its origins, the association, does it?
Yes, the association wanted such a book written. They put me in touch with Alan Unwin. Charles Firth was the particular person at Alan Unwin, who was very helpful with it. Another thing they got to work on was a bibliography of books about politics and economics, where we... it was, I think, a larger body than the original committee who dealt with this, and we agreed among ourselves which should read and write a commentary in the bibliography on each book. I remember Margaret Cole was on that. I can't remember anyone else. I think Brian Simon, E.D. Simon's son, took some part.
I don't want to have a word with him.
I think, yes. But of course, then came the war. So really, the Association of Education and Citizenship, having sort of planted a sapling, really broke up during the war. I couldn't take any further.
And that was the end of your contact with it, really?
Yes, so you see, I went away to Frome and then into the army.
Mm.
And I think it broke up.
Yes, well, it gradually died.
Yes.
Yes.
Its spiritual heirs, of course, are the Economics Association, and I think it's called the Politics Association, isn't it?
Yes, the Political Studies Association, I think, isn't it?
Is it? Yes.
You think they're the heirs in what sense, actually? Just in organising the teaching of the subjects?
Or well, and in promoting the idea that the subjects ought to be taught.
Mm. You see, Howard, who was a person you may have come across, who I went to see last week, thought that he was a sort of person fairly in the centre of the association. Mm. He thought that in a way the association had died, partly of its success, that is, that politics and economics are subjects that are quite generally accepted for teaching.
Well, I think that is true, yes. Mm. And our first struggle was to get the idea accepted that they ought to be taught in school.
Mm. What were the obstacles, really? I mean, it seemed extraordinary.
Well, with regard to politics, the fear of partisanship and the sloppy tendency to use politics as a disreputable word and to call it civics or something like that. With regard to economics, there was some opposition from universities who said, in effect, we don't want people coming up to the universities having been taught what we consider to be half-baked economics at school, which they have to unlearn. There was, I think, singularly little justification for that, and of course it ignored the greater part of the population who don't go to universities.
Yeah. Who are voters.
Yes. And I took the view that, I would put it like this. You can't make everybody a doctor. And it would be very wrong to give them a course of instruction to cause them to imagine that they were medically qualified. But most doctors would agree that the more people know first aid, the better. Unfortunately, of course, the public has had to learn some of the most important and simplest principles of economics by experience. I mean, as for example, that it is not the number of pound notes you get but what they will buy that matters.
So, actually teaching economics at the Cooper School, did you run into these sort of problems yourself, personally?
Not seriously, no. Mm. It was a new venture, Cooper's. The headmaster there was a very broad-minded chap, and he was keen to promote the teaching of economics. So I did that. And definitely as part of an examination syllabus, they took it in the General Certificate of Education, starting in the fourth form. So I did the fourth and fifth form preparing for the exam, and in the sixth form, a few boys who were going to take it for what we would now call O-levels, was then called Inter, if I remember rightly.
So you taught economics as your second, well, as the mainline activity there, did you?
Well, I spent about half my time on Latin and the other half on economics. Yes. And in the sixth form, there were some boys taking British Constitution.
So you taught that as well?
Yes. And I generally carved out a bit of the economics time in the fourth and fifth form to do quite simple politics. I mean, really just the bare facts of how the country is governed.
But this question of bias, if it was going to arise anywhere, would have arisen with you, wouldn't it? Because as a Labour candidate, everyone must have known you were a Labour candidate.
Oh, yes. Well, the headmaster didn't worry. I never ran into any trouble of that kind. Indeed, at the general election of 1950, four pupils of mine stood as candidates. One was a Tory, one was a Liberal, one was Labour, and one was a Communist. The Labour one was the only one who got in. That was Tony Greenwood, who was a pupil of mine for a short time at the Merchant Taylors.
Was he really?
Yes.
So, the bias problem didn't affect you personally, but you do feel it was a general problem.
In writing the pamphlet and getting the approval of the party representatives, I had to watch this. And you will see that the pamphlet is designed, that one of the points it's trying to drive home is that it is possible to do this without partisanship.
I mean, it's rather interesting, this, because it's the same policy that the BBC followed at that time, isn't it? It's a general phenomenon in English society, this fear of partisan
conflicts.
And why do you think it is?
Well, the association began, as I say, when the dictators were getting more and more menacing, and there was the dread of education becoming simply indoctrination. And you had to answer the question, can a democracy produce an educational system that will promote democracy without itself being accused of indoctrination?
I see, so it's directly related to totalitarianism, really. Because I think Simon said in a letter to Howard, actually, at one point, Hitler is right in thinking that citizenship should be inculcated, or people should be educated in citizenship.
Yes,
it's just the wrong attitude.
Yes,
I see, that's very interesting.
Howard, is that the chap who was headmaster there at Insalat?
That's right.
Yes. A very gifted and liberal-minded man.
Was he? Yes. He's now 83 and failing slightly.
Would be, yes.
But he was very helpful to me, actually. And then I went on to see Catherine Gibbard, you see.
And I know her very well.
Yes, she said she did.
Yes, with her wife and I. Well, indeed, we should be seeing her this coming weekend.
Will you really? I will do give her my
spend
regards.
A couple of days in Sussex.
It was Elspeth Chalfont. So it doesn't, in a sense, your involvement with the association doesn't in any way spring out of personal experience, except via the WEA classes, in a way.
It was through the WEA classes that I got to know Eva Hubbock. But I was the kind of person she would approach, I think, because I was both a politician and a teacher.
What was she like, actually, when you met her? I mean, what sort of person was she?
A very stimulating person, a bit dictatorial in manner, but obviously an inspiring person. I mean, the college was flourishing very greatly under her. Well, in those days, you see, when the prejudice against women was much greater than it is now, unless you were a fairly domineering, downright woman, you just didn't get anywhere.
When you say domineering, how do you mean?
Domineering is over... is putting it too strongly. When you were arguing with her, she had a massive confidence that she was right. Emphatic, perhaps, would be a fairer word than domineering.
She was physically quite impressive, wasn't she?
Yes, she was a tall, commanding-looking woman.
My impression is, and you must correct me if I'm wrong, that she was very interested in ideas. I mean, a very vital...
Very much so, yes.
But nonetheless, whatever she was thinking at the time, she thought was right.
Yes. And, of course, she was a practical woman, and being the head of a college involves a great deal more than than being interested in education as well as administrative ability.
So in a
and she knew people. She was very much in touch with politics. And
yes, that's my impression. She's in a sense a sort of link woman between a number of different worlds.
Yes.
It's a curious sort of role she had, a very important one, I think.
Yes.
So in a committee, how would she behave then? I mean, can you envisage her in a committee? Would she be driving through in a rather noisy way, or would it be quietly managed, or what do you think?
Not noisy, certainly. But if she was on a committee, nobody would have any doubt at the end of the meeting that she was one of the committee, however large it was. She made an impression.
Just by timely intervention?
Yes, yes. Well, she knew what she was talking about always, and she said it very emphatically.
What was the relationship with Simon then? I mean, what was their relative role in this? I don't know whether you were at that level.
Well, I don't know that I was.
Mm.
And I remember them, I think you'll probably be able to check this, but I think it was probably those two who brought the association into being.
Mm.
There may have been others. I don't know how large a part Howard played at the beginning. But,
he was a sort of amanuensis in a way, I think.
Yes.
But a lot of their publications in the periodical and elsewhere were produced through this process of discussion, weren't they? I mean, it's rather like a Fabian in its mood, isn't it, in a way?
Yes.
Curious sort of thing.
Somebody would be commissioned to write it, as I was, the pamphlet on Bias and Education for Democracy.
But it would embody a sort of common mind.
Yes, it was meant to.
What sort of people were they, actually?
Well, this is... You know, I cannot remember many of them now. I know Simon Hubbock Howard were there. And as I forget whether Margaret Cole was present at that first meeting when they all talked around the table and I summarised it. But she was certainly very active in the promotion of the bibliography. Beyond that, I'm afraid...
I was really wondering whether... Because, you see, it's a sort of lib-lab intellectual world, is it, that it moves in, really?
I think that is true, yes.
And it's not Labour at all, is it? I'm not tied to Labour
By no means. Indeed, we were desperately attempting, you see, to be all party.
Mm.
I expect there was someone who were Conservative, but I think Eva Hubbock would probably have seen to that. But who they were, I'm afraid I can't help.
Yes, my feeling is that it's the group of intellectuals who... Do smokers, don't you? A group of intellectuals who'd been involved with the Yellow Book, for instance, in 1929, that type of progressive liberal merging with the sort of first intellectual who was tempted towards the Labour Party, but trying to make sure that you got a Conservative election as well.
I'm sure there would have been. I'm sure Eva Hubbock would have seen to it. There were some Conservatives involved. I'm not quite sure what political label she would give herself.
Well, she became Labour later on, didn't she? But not at that time.
Not at that time. Mm-hmm. Simon, of course, was avowedly Liberal. Cole was Labour. I should think Howard would be, Margaret Cole, that is.
Howard was Liberal.
Was he? Mm. Yes.
He said, yes. But was G.D.H. Cole involved at all? Because in a way, he's the obvious person.
Yes, not to my recollection.
Yes. Now that's very interesting. That gives the milieu very nicely. What were you actually lecturing on, Mr. Stewart, actually in the WEA? Were you doing economics?
Oh, economics, yes. Yes.
Yes. So, in a way, does it also grow out of that as much as anything?
Well, first of all, there's the purely formal connection. It's because the class was at Morley that I was in touch with Eva Hubbock. Secondly, of course, when I came to write the book, The British Approach to Politics, that was influenced a good deal by WEA.
Was it?
Yes.
How, actually?
Well, if you're deciding what shall I write in order to make this intelligible, you think of your pupils, your adult students in the WEA class, and your pupils at school. And later on, when I came to write later editions of it, experience in the Royal Army Educational Corps.
So really, the role the association played in your own personal life is, one, getting you involved in writing that pamphlet.
Yes.
Two, making you think in a more formal way about politics, presumably, through encouraging you to write the British Approach to Democracy.
Yes.
Really. But I mean, apart from that, do you think it had any other importance in your life, really?
Well, it kept in my mind all the time the idea of promoting the teaching of politics and economics. And it's a thing I've always been interested in. I've always looked more kindly on requests to go and talk to sixth formers than on most other invitations, because I do think it's of great importance. And the Economics Association kindly made me their president for 2 years, that is a pure formality.
So you've retained the interest, and still believe in the objectives?
Well, very much so, yes. I'm going to talk to the conference of sixth formers arranged by, I think it's the Historical Association. The chap who runs that is the chap I met in army education during the war.
And you're going to talk to them about what?
I'm going to talk to them about the work of a cabinet minister.
Oh, really? Yes, that'll be extremely interesting. So, really, presumably behind all this, to some extent, is a loathing of the Hitler regime, the Mussolini regime,
yes,
really.
Yes.
I mean, was that important in your own case personally?
Oh, very much so, yes.
Yes, yes.
May I ask, you said you were 40?
I'm 40, yes.
Yes.
So I was born in 1937.
Yes. Hitler was dead while you were still...
Well, I was still a child
young.
In
45,
yes.
Well, one wants to try to appreciate the atmosphere of the 30s. You see, after the First World War, there were high hopes of building a really civilized community in Europe and in the world. League of Nations. And it's interesting to remember, League of Nations Union, which was the successor of which, of course, is the United Nations Association, had a membership of 750,000. There was the great ballot they held in 1934, wasn't it? There was a great hope of building a worldwide democratic civilization. Then there came this dark shadow from Germany, and to a lesser extent from Italy. Well, people who are interested in politics at all were realizing that democracy was going to have to fight for its life. This was very much in the minds of anyone who thought politically at all.
Eva, of course, was a Jewess, wasn't she, by birth?
Was she?
Had a sort of additional incentive,
yes.
Didn't she? But did you actually yourself go to Germany at all, or Italy, during this period?
No.
It was just a sort of intellectual appreciation of the...
Well, intellectual and moral and emotional, yeah.
Yes.
And you felt there was a wild beast loose in Europe, you're saying.
And particularly the Labour candidate, of course, one would be perhaps more aware of that than most people would.
Yes.
So what do you feel about the methods used by the association? It was a very sort of intellectual association in the sense it's primarily aiming to get at people through experts.
That was its definite purpose, an association for education in citizenship.
Do you think that was the right way to do it?
I think it's one of the things you've got to do. I think it would be a mistake for an association formed for that purpose to have tried to have done other things as well. This was a clearly defined task. And I think somebody said it died of its success, in a sense. Well, it was partly that. If the war hadn't come, I imagine it would have progressed and be still alive today.
Yes. In a way, you have tremendous influence, don't you, in society and politics, if you work through intermediaries who themselves have influence.
Yes.
Clearly, it sort of radiates, yes, doesn't it, out, yes, through schoolmasters. Did you actually have meetings and attend meetings and so on of schoolmasters? I mean, or was your role primarily writing things, do you think?
Primarily writing things, but if you can get in touch with other members of the association, they may have had a different experience. Mm.
How did the association actually receive your British approach to politics book? I mean, did they, Eva, you say, wasn't, said you wanted a different sort of book?
Yes, yes. I can only say I think the subsequent sales of it have justified me in that argument.
Oh, certainly, yes. What sort of book do you think she did want you to write?
Well, frankly, I don't know.
She originally, it was she who originally suggested the idea, was it, or was it the group who suggested the idea of the book?
It was she who suggested it to me.
Because it's what it is basically is a simple introduction for fifth and sixth forms, I suppose. Isn't
well,
it?
And I would say sixth forms and first year at universities. Mm. Well, my wife told me when she felt it really had arrived, when she heard a student speaking to another student refer to it simply as Stuart.
So it really has been very much your most successful book, hasn't it?
Yes, well, I've only written two, not counting the pamphlet and one or two things I've done for the Fabian Society.
Did you actually use the book yourself in teaching? I mean, did it reflect back on your teaching at Cooper's after?
Well, no, you see, the book came out in 1938. As I told you, I only did a limited amount of politics at Cooper's, only with the... I suppose it did, yes. Well, I was interested in politics at a very early age, and I was always looking for a book that would simply tell me straightforwardly how the country was governed and what the arguments in politics were about. And at that time, there didn't seem to be one. Everybody seemed to write trying to put over a particular theory of how he thought the country ought to be governed. Well, there was Ramsay Muir's book. I forget now what that was called.
How Britain is Governed, then.
Yes. Well, I was really the successor of Ramsay Muir in... examiners used to remark that all their candidates in British Constitution were propagandists for proportional representation, which is very much in Ramsay Muir's book.
Because he's a liberal, wasn't he?
Yes. As I say, I felt there ought to be a book that would simply tell you straightforwardly how the thing was governed and what the... of course, Badgett does that in a sense, but on the mere mechanics, he's out of date. In his spirit and appreciation of how the thing works, of course, he's immortal. It's marvellous the way how much of that is...
But you say you actually went around to interview people. Did the association actually give you the entree to interviewing these people with a view to writing the book?
Well, I think the three parties were approached and asked to nominate people who would read the pamphlet and... read the draft of the pamphlet.
I see. So operate in that
and talk
way.
To me about it.
And did your book, in a sense, grow out of those?
I'm sorry, not no book. This is the pamphlet.
Yes. I was really wondering about how you actually wrote the book. I mean,
well, that was very much really my own work.
What, as a result of interviewing, talking to people at all?
I saw people. These would be different people from the three party representatives I saw on the pamphlet. Well, for example, I went to see the secretary of NALGO when I was writing the chapters on local government. I talked to a number of MPs whom I knew personally about how Parliament worked, that sort of thing.
And really, that was again stemming from your own personal connection,
rather than
the association, that's very interesting. I mean, do you actually think there's a sort of room for a new book of this kind now?
I'm not sure that it hasn't already been written.
Yes.
Macintosh has written
a book. Oh, Macintosh, yes.
Though I think his is probably for a rather older group of people than...
Yes, yes. Macintosh is very good, I think.
Yes.
His cabinet book's extremely
yes,
good book.
Yes,
yes. Yes, so, in a way, that's where the association fits into your life, and really financially rather important,
indeed,
as you say.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
As well as in other ways, yes. Why? One thing that is a bit puzzling to me, I mean, the way you describe it, is why you ever got involved in the classics then, if you were interested from an early age in politics. I mean, one would have thought you would have got into either history or,
yes.
You know.
Well, you must remember, I went to Christ Hospital at the age of 11 in the year 1918, when the whole weight of public school was very much classic. And I, at that age, of course, had no idea what was involved. So I really don't know why I... but I lapped up the classics. But I have a kind of mind that relies much more on the eye than the ear. So I found modern languages a bit difficult with the question of pronunciation. Particularly French, where it seemed to me they didn't pronounce half the letters. Well, Latin, you see, great solid chunks of grammar to memorise and pronounce the words just as they're written, came more easily to me. But later on, of course, I found myself very much interested in the political aspects of the classics.
Did you really? What,
yes, well, in Greek history. And Plato. And Aristotle.
So that... Well, was that then the reason why you took PPE at Oxford rather than...
Well, Plato? I made up my mind when I was at Oxford, if I was going to be a politician, I did need more knowledge of the modern world. I don't know if it's still planned as it was then, but... In my day, if you were going to take greats, it was a 4-year course. After 5 terms, you took honor moderation.
Still like
yes. And then did 2 years and a term. Well, I followed the classics as far as honor moderations, and then switched over and did 2 years and a term on PPE.
I see. So you made the transition that way.
Yes,
yes, I see. Yes, yes. So in fact, you had your 4 years, but
yes.
The second half is like yes. A sort of tripod system.
Yes,
yes, I see. And then, of course, you were president of the union, weren't you, in 1929. So that must have come in the middle. Well, no, towards the end, I suppose, of all this. So that must have accentuated your interest.
I went up to St John's. What would it be? Autumn 1925.
So it was right at the end then, wasn't it, of your course?
Yes. I just managed to get the presidency of the union then.
Yes. So how...
And of course I was in the Labour Club and in
yes.
University politics
yes.
all the time.
Yes. Yes, I see. So who actually taught you the politics part of PPE? I don't know who were the fellows in St John's at that time. Maybe you were sent out for politics tuition, I don't know.
Well, chiefly, W.C. Costin.
Oh, I'm a Costin pupil.
Are you? Yes.
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 You did constitutional documents and things like that with him. Did you
yes.
The British
yes.
Constitution?
I took, you know, you could arrange all, I made economics number one, politics two. Philosophy 3.
So you really did what? You did sort of one or two compulsory papers in politics and not much more than that.
Yes, really. And it was more history since 1760 than...
You see, that has changed quite a lot. Though.
Yes, I imagine.
Yes. Well, that's interesting. So it was Costin who actually...
Yes.
well, because I was at St John's when Costin was president, of course,
yes.
So I remember him quite well. So when you were actually teaching economics at school, did you have any sort of distinctive methods? You see, Kathleen Gibbard had a parliament, for instance, when she was teaching politics
yes.
and that idea. I wonder whether you had any...
Well, I ran that... there was a a mock parliament, an extracurricular activity that one did after school, yes.
At the Cooper's School?
Yes, yes.
Yes, and you actually did that?
Yes,
did you really?
Yes.
Yes. So really, you're the ideal person for the association, aren't you? Because you've got political connections, you've got...
school.
You're in a London school.
Yes, yes.
You've got practical and academic experience of politics.
Yes.
Well, that's splendid. Is there anything else you'd like to say before I switch off about the association, about its importance and generally, that I haven't asked you?
Well, I think the obvious thing, that there was clearly a crying need for it. Mm. And still is, or at least, if not for it, for its work to be carried on. Mm. I sometimes wonder whether the Economics Association and the relative politics body are not treating the subjects too academically and keeping their eye perhaps too much on those who are going to university. Mm. Whereas really you ought to see that this is part of the central core of education for everybody. However, I see this is now, in the arguments about the central core of education, this is now generally accepted.
Well, Bernard Crick, in a sense, seems to me to be reviving the association, in a sense.
I believe so,
with
yes.
a different name and so on.
Yes.
Trying to get back to the idea of politics
yes.
as something that everybody
yes,
ought
indeed.
To learn about,
yes.
you know,
yes.
rather than just a sort of academic
yes.
study.
Yes.
Did you actually innovate in on Ramsay Muir in any conscious way? Did you deliberately try to broaden out the analysis of politics in your own book from his in any way?
Well, I think I tried to be more practical. It seemed to me that he'd often left the question of how do the wheels actually go round too vague. I tried to be more precise, and I'm not sure that Crick approves of that. He calls it the institutional approach. Mm. But my own feeling is, until the pupil knows that, he finds it difficult in finding his way about the rest.
No, I quite agree. My own feeling.
No, I agree. I mean,
and after all, since the object of most of the press is to prevent changes.
Mm. Yes. There's a certain sort of failure to understand that in any society every side's got to make compromises, and that there are trade-offs and bargains and so on
yes.
to be made, and that complete sincerity in politics is very rarely possible. That is, you're very often in a sort of bargaining situation
oh, yes.
or something where you can't sort of tell the complete truth.
And nearly all the problems you have to solve are problems that involve a certain degree of compromise.
Yes, yes. And they, very often they then deduce, well, because some particular politician doesn't actually say exactly what he's going to do
yes.
next week, that he's dishonest,
yes.
or that he's got something to hide, or whatever. Whereas, in fact, all he's doing is preserving his freedom of manoeuvre so that he can actually
yes.
reach an agreement
yes.
next week, this
yes.
sort of situation.
Well, one of the most striking examples, of course, is Harold Wilson, the Labour Party,
mm.
and the EEC. Mm. Now, I was certain all along that what Harold wanted to do was to get us into the EEC, and after the Tories had got us in, to keep us there, and to do this without tearing the Labour Party to bits. Now, the path to that was bound to be tortuous. But they were both worthy objects, and he was successful.
Yes, I agree. I think it came very near the limit, speaking purely personally,
yes.
in the sense that when in power, and this is, I mustn't take you up too much of your time, when in power, you actually commit yourself to the market, and then when in opposition, you start making depreciatory remarks
yes.
about it, and then when in power again, you start saying it's rather a good thing.
Yes.
It's going near the wind, isn't it?
Well, it is, yes. But you see, he couldn't do what Gaitskill did over unilateral nuclear disarmament.
Mm.
That is, stand up 100%, fight, 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 fight again. Hugh Gaitskill had the strong platform of the Parliamentary Party to stand on,
yes.
with which to fight conference. Harold Wilson had not.
Yes, that's quite a point, isn't it?
It had to be much more manoeuvring. Yeah. Secondly, of course, the question on which Hugh Gaitskill was fighting was in the long run even more important than the EEC, the British membership of the EEC, and was one that did not admit of compromise.
Yes, that's very interesting. But I think maybe when it actually comes to practical decisions like, for instance, wage bargaining and so on, most people do have a real appreciation of the political process, but in their formal remarks in conversation
yes.
about politics, it seems to me they don't
yes.
understand
yes.
what a politician is doing or anything.
No. Though, of course, it is a bit like, jokes about politicians are a bit like jokes about mothers-in-law. In fact, most men get on quite well with their mother-in-law. Indeed, Granny is a respected and loved member of the family. I sometimes find constituents will make remarks like this about politicians. They say, of course, I don't mean you, Mr. Stewart. Well, I'm probably the only politician they know well enough to pronounce a personal judgment on.
See, a thing that I find, this is a purely personal thing, but I find this rather alarming. My mother and father-in-law, my father-in-law was in Dunkirk and everything, and one would have thought would have a sort of rather enthusiasm for democratics
yes.
and so on. But they both in various ways disillusioned with this country and went off to Mallorca and started a little yacht
yes.
maintenance firm there. And can't say good enough words for the Franco regime and so on.
Yes.
And you know, he's sort of keeping them in order and he's, you know,
yes.
really got a sense of direction. Everybody's yes. getting more and more prosperous and so on. And it just seemed to me quite extraordinary for quite intelligent people, you know,
yes.
to have this sort of attitude after having lived in a democratic
yes.
society for 50 years.
So yes.
A bit alarming, really. But still, I mean, maybe when it really comes to the crunch, as it did in 1940, there is somehow sort of residual
yes.
Belief in politics and democratic institutions.
Well, democracy, you see, doesn't appear to be so obviously under threat
yes.
as it did in the 30s.
That's true, so you've had the luxury of criticizing.
Yes.
Yes, that may be true.
I think probably in the long run it is as much under threat.
Yes, yes.
But the trouble is, you see, working class people have a sort of folk memory about the Tories and Russia. And if a Tory tells them there's a great menace from Russia, they conclude that probably the Tory's up to some dirty trick or other.
yes. But even if you take individual politicians, you see, I mean, really speaking entirely, it'll be irrelevantly, but it seemed to me astonishing, for instance, that Harold Macmillan came out for a coalition, whenever it was, a year or so ago. He ought to realise how the two-party system promotes consensus in
yes,
society.
Yes, yes, yes.
You don't need coalitions.
Well, I don't think one ought to attach too much importance to that. Arthur is a very old man now.
Maybe it's a sort of sign that he was very old. But I mean, there's quite a lot of people in the Conservative Party argue in a way for electoral reform, which seems to me quite naive politically
yes,
in a way.
Thinking
that somehow if you isolate out your moderates or your centrists
yes.
in the political system, that somehow the centre will be more dominant than in a two-party
yes,
system.
Yes.
It's stupid.